The most evocative line in the piece comes out of the texture. The choir's been singing, and then the tenor says, "Of all the kings who came to call, one was dark like me." And every time I hear that phrase sung by the soloist, I get chills.
That's Dr. Malcolm Merriweather. He's the music director of the Desoth Choirs, which is one of the most outstanding amateur choirs in this country. They recently collaborated with a harpist. Her name is Dr. Ashley Jackson. She did her dissertation on a piece called The Ballad of the Brown King. It's a work that's profoundly impacted both of these musicians, and I think it will impact you as well. It's an amazing story, and it's featured this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julia Macher. I'm talking with Dr. Malcolm Merriweather and Dr. Ashley Jackson, who are involved in a new project. It celebrates the music of Margaret Bonds, in particular the Ballad of the Brown King and a few other selected songs. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Julie.
Thank you so much.
I want to start off by asking you a little bit about the Desoth Choirs. Malcolm, you've been involved with this choir now for the past several years. How did you begin your relationship with this ensemble?
Well, I am the 9th music director of the Desoth Choirs, and I was appointed 4 years ago after a national search. And this position is sought after. The Desoth Choirs has been around for 95 years and has been recognized as one of the most outstanding amateur choirs in the country. So I'm delighted to be at the helm of such a wonderful group.
And the ensemble that appears on this recording is the core group of about 40 voices?
That's correct. Our dedicated core group rehearses every Monday night from 7 to 10 p.m., and they make up the voices of our regular season subscription.
And they've had some pretty exciting world premieres. And I was also reading that this ensemble performed in Laura Mazel's final performance as music director of the New York Philharmonic. So they get around.
That's correct. You probably noted that the Desoth Choirs, the plural aspect of our name, and we are three different choirs, the core choir, which you've mentioned, and the chamber choir, which is about 20 voices, and then a full symphonic choir of 200 voices, which performed in those final performances of Maestro Mazel.
Now, what for you is the most rewarding thing in working with this ensemble?
The Desoth Choirs is a unique amateur group because they come to rehearsal prepared to work every week. We have 6 concerts every year, and we go through a lot of repertoire, which means that everyone in the group has to have a high level of musicianship. They have excellent ears, and they come to rehearsal ready to make music. So for a conductor, that really enhances the collaborative experience of working with a group of singers, to have musicians at your disposal that delight in a challenge, but also are always ready to improve.
Ashley, you're the featured harpist on this new release, and your relationship to the repertoire is very special. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself? And then I would also love for you to share with us how the Ballad of the Brown King became the subject of your dissertation.
Sure, Julie. So I was first introduced to Margaret Bonds as a composer during my first couple of years at Juilliard as a doctoral student. And I remember my first semester research class, there was a book that was being passed around, and it was music by Black female composers. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, you know, I've gone through an undergraduate degree, a master's degree, and I've never come across a reference book that was solely dedicated to music by my ancestors. And so I kept that in the back of my mind. And when I was thinking about what to write my dissertation on, I started doing some research. And I came across Margaret Bonds, her life and her story. And I felt a kind of kindred connection. She came from a very supportive family like myself. She attended Northwestern and just throughout her life was so dedicated to using her music and her art to bring people together. And that really resonated with me as I was nearing the end of my academic career and starting to feel kind of alone. I was always the only Black female in my music classes. And so here was somebody I could really turn to and dedicate several years of research. So in doing so, I came across The Ballad of the Brown King. This piece seemed to mean a lot to Margaret Bonds, but yet there weren't any dissertations about the piece. There really wasn't any kind of extensive research. And so for me, that felt like, you know, here was an opportunity to do service to a piece that meant a lot to the composer. And that's how I came across The Ballad of the Brown King.
I want to talk a little bit more about the story of Margaret Bonds because it is a fascinating one. She played piano in her church on Sunday mornings, and then her home actually became a gathering place for prominent Black artists who would pass through the South Side of Chicago, including Florence Price, who actually stayed with the family for a while.
That's correct.
Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. Florence Price had recently divorced her husband. She had been living in Alabama. She had two young girls. And she wanted to move to Chicago to focus on her composition career. And so she did. But this was during the Great Depression. And so she needed a place to stay. And Margaret Bonds' mother opened up her home. And it was there that she was working on her first symphony. And Margaret Bonds remembers anyone who could read music or help out would come by and help Price complete the parts for that particular score.
That's pretty amazing because I'm thinking about them just opening their home, and I'm wondering, how did this gathering place support the Black artists beyond Chicago, perhaps?
Well, it really put different artists in contact with one another. I mean, that's how Langston Hughes and Margaret Bonds met. He had been in Chicago, and he came by her house, and she remembers meeting him, and, you know, they became lifelong friends after that.
Margaret Bonds studied piano and vocal composition at Northwestern University back in 1929, and I know she faced intense discrimination. Can you talk a little bit about what that experience was like for her, which did eventually lead her to the poetry of Langston Hughes?
Sure. So at the time, Northwestern didn't provide any housing for its Black students. And so she had to commute from the South Side of Chicago to Evanston every day for her coursework, which is daunting to think about a young college student who's eager and ready to learn and has no place to stay on campus. In addition to that, the school didn't allow Black female students to use the swimming pool. So she remembers being in this university that, at the one hand, gave her really great opportunities to study with excellent professors of piano, choral music, but on the other hand, wouldn't really let her be a part of the community. And so she looked towards ways to kind of feel comforted, and that's how she discovered the poetry of Langston Hughes. She was in the Evanston Public Library, and she came across a collection of his poems, and towards the end of her life, she remembers, here was a poet, a Black artist like myself, who was saying all of the things that I hadn't been able to put into words. And it was really, I think, from that point on that she dedicated her musical language to always speaking positively about Black people.
And she became not just friends with Langston Hughes, but they were very close, almost like siblings. Can you talk a little bit about their relationship, both as friends and their musical relationship?
Sure. So Langston Hughes had settled in Harlem, and when Bonds had graduated from Northwestern, she wanted to move to New York City. Just like today, many artists feel that we've got to come to New York to make it. And so when she did, they were neighbors. They both lived in Harlem, and they would write each other all kinds of letters. And in these letters, you can get a sense of what their relationship was really like. They would send each other words of encouragement. They would write about more business-related matters. You know, if they were working on a piece together, they would talk about the publicity, you know, how is it going? People are attending the shows. Margaret Bonds would attend things that Langston Hughes was at and, you know, write to him and say, oh, you were wonderful. This was so great. So their relationship really seemed to be deep on multiple levels. As I mentioned, that they worked together on projects. The Ballad of the Brown King is one such collaboration. But they also more deeply, I think, shared this sense of responsibility as Black artists and this idea that they had to use their art for the uplift of the community. And I think that's what really kind of made their friendship and their professional relationship so deep, is that they really both worked towards making sure that whatever they put out there as artists, that Black people were seen in a positive light. And that's what connected them.
Now, much of her music remains unpublished today, and so what we're hearing on this recording are new arrangements that will hopefully bring her music into the public eye more. I'm curious how the two of you, Malcolm and Ashley, decided to create this project together.
Well, let me tell you, it has been a journey, and it has been wonderful. I attended a performance of Ashley. Ashley was playing harp. And I read her biography, and in the biography was listed the topic of her dissertation. So I found her email, and I organized a meeting. And we met in Harlem on 127th Street and Malcolm X Boulevard at a cafe. And she shared her journey through the doctoral program at Juilliard and told me all about The Ballad of the Brown King. She also brought a score for me. I took that score home and I played through it on my piano in my apartment, and I really fell in love with the piece. And in a similar fashion, I've gone through 4 music degrees, and not once has the music of Margaret Bonds been mentioned. So I was stirred by that, but also felt a sense of responsibility to, in some way, correct this. In thinking about the practicality of performing any work, it all comes down to money these days, especially in classical music. And the original orchestration for The Ballad of the Brown King is full orchestra, which can really be prohibitive for a community group like the Dusoff Choirs or a church choir. And I think that was really the sort of audience and the sort of ensemble Bonds and Hughes were really intending this work to be performed by. So I had an idea to reduce the orchestration for strings, harp, and organ to make it a little bit more accessible for a community choir or a church choir. And that was a lot of work, but it was really illuminating to look at the compositional prowess of Margaret Bonds. And I will say that the arrangement and the addition are really in line with what she has done in other pieces, in her songs. I'm really just reducing the winds and the brass and absorbing those parts into an organ part and enlivening the harp part a little bit so that we have an ensemble that is appropriate for a mid-sized choir or a church choir. I will say that also the work has never been recorded. There are a few, I will say, mediocre performances on YouTube and on the internet. But after I played through this piece on my piano that first time, I sort of made it my mission to produce a really fine recording of this music because it really deserves that. And after the first read-through of the piece with the Dusoff Choirs about 2 years ago, when we began preparing for the recording, the choir immediately fell in love with the music. And that's really a testament to Margaret Bonds and to Langston Hughes.
Let's talk about the music. I'd love for each of you to just kind of go through the ballad, the different movements for us, please. What are we hearing?
What we're hearing is a retelling of the nativity story, of the birth of Jesus, of the Christmas story. But we're looking at it sort of through the journey of one of those three wise men. And she's focusing on the dark-skinned king, Balthazar. And in doing that, she's positioning such a familiar story, but she's putting it through a different lens so that listeners, all types of listeners, diverse audiences, can see themselves in a story that sometimes leaves us out.
One aspect of this piece that really captures me is the way Bonds sets the portrayal of this brown king, of this Ethiopian king, through a lens of excellence. And that's partly attributed to, obviously, Langston Hughes, who wrote the libretto. And this is something that's not often seen in art, in music, and across the board for Black people. So I think it's a really important element to note that Black people were not always slaves. You know, we're descendants of kings and queens from great kingdoms, from great political and economic systems on the continent of Africa. Now, specifically in the Ballad of the Brown King, Bonds starts off with this majestic, free melody. Da 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 da, which is a motif that recurs over and over and over again. Over and over and over again, and comes back. There are three soloists that we've used on the recording, a soprano, we open with the tenor soloist.
Of the three wise men who came to the king, one was a brown man, so they sing.
And then the mezzo soprano comes in at the end in a joyful duet with the soprano. I think that the choir really represents the voices of our ancestors, and the soloists really come in and out of that texture to represent the present day, the living people among the earth. When the soloists come in, they really say something. The most evocative line in the piece comes out of the texture, the choir's been singing, and then the tenor says, "Of all the kings who came to call, one was dark like me."
Of all the kings who came to call, one was dark like me. And I'm so glad that he was there, a little Christ to see.
And every time I hear that phrase sung, I get chills. Because thinking about my ancestors, but also in Margaret Bonds, I see my grandmother, I see my aunt, I see, you know, my sister. So this text and this piece has become deeply personal for me.
Well, and she wrote this work with a very specific purpose in mind. It did coincide with the civil rights movement. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So the first version of this piece was premiered in 1954. And then sometime after that, she asked Langston Hughes to provide text for two additional movements. And also during that period, she decided to score it for full orchestra. And that version was premiered in 1960. And it was also at that time that she decided to dedicate the work to Martin Luther King Jr. And as we've been, you know, doing different interviews, and I've been thinking about this work again, it's pretty astounding, because when you think about what was happening in the civil rights movement, the events that were getting national attention, you had the Montgomery bus boycott in the late 50s. Before that, you had the 1954 Brown versus Board of Education. But Martin Luther King Jr. was really just on the rise in terms of becoming a national, international spokesperson for the movement towards civil rights. And so Bonds must have really been in tune with what was happening on both the national and local levels to think that this piece should be dedicated to Martin Luther King Jr., that she almost could foresee his precipitous rise as an incredible spokesperson for all of us in this movement towards civil rights. And the significance of that, I think we can't diminish that. His great speech wasn't until 1963. So she really was kind of sensitive, and she could feel that there was a movement happening before the nation could really witness it on TV and on different broadcasts.
And I think that also in the piece, the word king comes up over and over again. You know, she's talking about Balthazar, but she's really alluding and perhaps foreshadowing to the great prominence and the reign of Martin Luther King Jr.
And something else that, in thinking about the music of the Ballad of the Brown King, kind of dispersed throughout, you've got this kind of walking motive, this marching motive. To evoke the journey of the three wise men.
Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem, in the days of Herod the King.
But it also so closely connects with the peaceful protests, the Montgomery bus boycott, and throughout the country, that very specific tactic that Martin Luther King Jr. was such an advocate for, this marching towards freedom, this marching towards equality. And so when you hear the piece, you can also really get that sense that not only is it evoking the journey of the three wise men, but also in more contemporary times of her day, the peaceful protest and the singing that often accompanied the walking and marching of civil rights activists.
I have a feeling we could talk about this recording for a very long time. I want to ask you, what was most memorable for each of you in putting this recording together?
My most memorable moment from this project actually happened at the first rehearsal with the choir. Granted, it was with piano, but we read through the piece, as we often do, and the response was unanimous. Everyone really loved this piece, and that is not common with choirs. I mean, you always have a couple people who are, oh, I'm not really into this piece, but to look around the room and see the smiles on everyone's faces, and it was really, really rewarding to have a piece that everyone could really dig into and enjoy.
Alleluia, alleluia, alleluia.
most memorable moment for me, Julie, was walking into the first rehearsal with the orchestra and the choir. Because when I completed my dissertation and my conclusion, I lamented the fact that there was no recording and was a little bit, I don't want to say pessimistic, but unsure about sort of the future of the music of Margaret Bonds. And so when I was sitting in the back of the orchestra and I was listening to the choir, some of the members were right behind me, and finally hearing the music of a piece that I had spent years looking at, I just felt so overjoyed and grateful for the gift that Bonds and Hughes gave us. And I could almost feel her smiling down on the work that we were doing.
I hope that choir directors around the world hear this piece and perform this piece. I think it's fantastic. It feels good to sing. As singers, we say, that feels good in the throat. When you finish singing this piece, your throat feels wonderful.
And thinking also about this project and what was memorable about it was how Margaret Bonds and Hughes came together over their shared love of great art and Black people. And in introducing this piece to Malcolm, that years later, the same thing is happening. And it was over our shared love of art and wanting to give voice to a composer like Margaret Bonds that we also became friends and collaborators, and we're looking forward to our next project.
Malcolm Merriweather and Ashley Jackson talking about the Ballad of the Brown King. They recently collaborated on this very incredible recording featuring the music of Margaret Bonds. Thank you to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode of New Classical Tracks. If this is a program you really enjoy, the best thing you can do is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher.